Hi, everyone. You're listening to In the Open, a podcast by Mental Health America, where we talk all things mental health related.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to In the Open. It's Teresa here, and I have our guest, Karen.
Hi, Teresa. Hi, everyone.
Today, we're gonna talk about being stuck in grieving, or just grieving as a process. But the topic is actually, I'm still grieving, which indicates like a long-term process. So I'm really glad that you're going to be here to share about your experiences. So start with telling me about why this topic resonates with you.
So thanks so much, Teresa. I love joining these podcasts with you in America. I think for me, it was kind of the time and space that we're in. As you guys know, I'm a young single person, fairly young, I guess, 34. And I spend a lot of time by myself right now because of COVID, since I live alone. And with some of that empty time, I've realized that there has been some kind of control issues, I guess. And so digging deep and trying to get to, you know, where the root of that comes from, I think I figured out that because I lost control of something at a very early age when my same-sex parent died, my mom died when I was 9 years old, I think I found that I tried to control my emotions in ways that made my family comfortable and made me comfortable. So I kind of pushed that away. And my dad actually says, I never grieved as a child. He doesn't think that I grieved. He didn't see signs of grief in me as a child. And so I think now I'm at a point where I am grieving my mom, and it comes out at different times, especially a couple of days before my period, when my hormones are changing and out of whack. And so I think that because I'm alone in a safe space in my condo, I can cry and grieve and feel like a sense of safety in this space without having to think about where I have to go next and what I have to do next and some of the kind of normal routine things that happen when we're not in a pandemic, you know, in the middle of summertime.
Oh, yeah. I know that silence is so hard because having silence is scary when it brings up feelings and hard things. But tell me a little, like, what did that look like in that moment? Like, you were about to have your period and then you...
So I didn't realize it, but I just woke up last Wednesday morning and just like started to meditate, which I try to do like at least 5 or 10 minutes of meditation. And then I just started crying incessantly. And then I just started like boo-hooing, like belly, like nasty, loud.
Ugly cry.
Someone's going to hear me. Ugly cry, right?
Yeah.
Someone's going to hear me and think like I got beat up or something. And I was like, oh my God, like, what is this? And, you know, I've been trying to figure out how to grow and do kind of self-inventory and all these things in this quiet time. And I think I realized that like it was connected to my mom's death. And I think there's like this kind of like almost like a ball of emotional pain in my stomach that I just tried to avoid for a really long time. And I think that probably led to why I'm anxious. But it certainly is something that I still have to grieve, I guess. And I'm coming to terms with that, that my mom's death is not something that I should be ashamed of, you know, anymore. As an adult, I know now, like, it's not shameful that your parent died. But it is something that I was really kept quiet and didn't share with people in childhood. And I think because of the pandemic, I just now have like all of this alone time to think and feel. And it's scary, but it's also like very healing and therapeutic to just cry. I actually used to like try to force myself to cry and I couldn't. And I used to get angry with myself, like, you feel things. Why can't you release them? I have like this issue with letting go of my feelings instead of holding it all inside. And so I'm like never the person who like really like gets upset over things, or I'm like usually calm under pressure. But, you know, once I blow up, I blow up.
Yeah, you said that your mom died when you were 9 and you didn't really show like those signs when you were young. Did you learn before that even to just shut off your feelings, you think?
Well, my nickname as a child was Crying Karen. So because my brothers were really not emotional people and they saw me crying, and I have 3 brothers. And so that was my 2 older brothers called me Crying Karen. So I cried as a kid. I did cry when my mom died. I thought I grieved. I thought I did what was right. But then I saw in the household that like we didn't really like keep my mom alive in conversation and discussions very often. It was usually like maybe here and there. But like when she died, I felt like it was almost like you couldn't talk about how great it was to have her around or things like that. So, I mean, it was nothing that was ever really spoken. It was just like, you know, you try to get through it. And my mom and dad were separated when she died. So that was kind of a strained relationship, I'm sure. But my dad is just not very emotional and has trouble with like feelings of love and things like that. So I think I learned to just, instead of becoming like comfortable with expressing emotion, I became more comfortable with like pretending they don't exist or trying to operate outside of emotion in a very logical, you know, way. And my dad was also in the military. So I think, you know, his kind of, you know, way of operating kind of rubbed off on me. And totally. So now I'm trying to unlearn some of those ways of dealing with emotions. And I actually have really intense emotions and I'm learning how to like let them sit, but also like let them go. And a part of me letting them go is like writing, writing about them, talking about them. I have this really wild creative side. I like to draw and paint and color.
That's awesome. But you're saying something that's really like key to, I think, a lot of people's experiences, because losing your mom is a traumatic experience. It's so sad. And you were so young. And the environment that you were in taught you how to cope with these hard things by a lot of ways that I think we all relate to, which is just shove it in. Don't make waves. Like, what in you at 9 years old did you knew even at 9 that everything around you, your dad, your brothers were saying, don't make waves. Is that why you didn't grieve?
I mean, I think that's certainly part of it. And I think it might also be that I didn't have a model for what healthy grieving in a woman looks like. There were times where I wanted to move away from home and live with my aunt or live with like another mother and a family that to me felt warm and emotional. And my dad wasn't having that, but I also didn't really push it because I also felt like it would break my dad's heart for like his daughter to move away, you know, to get what she needed. So it was like kind of a push and pull or a tug between, do I make my dad happy or do I make myself happy? And my dad's my only living parent. So I think I chose him. And so it was a personal choice as well as this is what was around me and what was comfortable.
Yeah.
And learned behavior.
I really appreciate that lens because I think sometimes when we think about our experiences, we want to put like a black and white thing, like, oh, this was good or bad. And what you're saying was that like that choices and events in your life, they're nuanced, or like they have a lot of reasons why you might not have been able to grieve at 9, you know, it's not necessarily your dad's fault. That's what he knew. You wanted to be with him. it wasn't like he trained you to be, you know, a soldier or something like that. You know, you were just like, this is what happened. And that's really healthy to just be able to see it for what it is and say, these are the circumstances. And maybe now the universe is like, oh, you're ready. This is when we're going to do it. You know, hey, coronavirus gift.
It is. You know, coronavirus is like a blessing and a curse in one. It's like what we all needed, but also what is driving us crazy. And a lot of people are suffering. So not to minimize that, but I think that in the suffering and the grieving, there's also our humanity and a chance to try again, a chance to start again, a chance at some type of change or transition. Since life is, you know, never stagnant and still, and things are always changing, we can do this even in a period of suffering, which may make us more appreciative and grateful for what comes out of it, even in the suffering.
Yeah. I do like the idea of things will happen when your mind and your spirit, or I don't know, I want to believe in this idea that things come at a time, or maybe I just say that because then it makes me feel better when I'm dealing with crap. I don't know. Anyways, let's go back to grieving. So what does that look like? Like, what is your sense of what your grieving actually looks like now that you're doing it?
So I knew that I needed time to myself because that's kind of my personality, to need time to myself. I'm like an introverted extrovert. So like I gather energy from other people, but I also exhaust a lot of energy around other people. So I need breaks for myself. And I'm very independent, sometimes overly independent. So I knew that I needed time for myself. I knew that like I felt healthier when I worked out and like wrote in my journal and like expressed, but I also kind of got tired of routine and regimen. So I was like, let's shake things up. Like, let's do something different. Like, let's not write in our journal for a whole, you know, three or four months. Let's not work out because it's a pandemic and there has been some like stress eating and all of that.
But you were meditating and the thoughts, you started to ugly cry. At what point did you turn to realizing it was about your mom?
So I was actually text messaging with my brother and he sent me this photo of our niece who he claims is his twin and they look very much alike. They do. And then I claimed her and sent him a picture of us when he and I were like, I was one or two and he was 7 or 8. And it's one of the only pictures that we have from childhood together, just us. And I told him, sometimes I look at this when I miss you. And I just broke down into tears because just me sharing that was kind of a show of a display of emotion and love that my brothers don't always know what to do with. So I was placing something kind of in his lap and he chose not to respond, which is totally fine. But I have had kind of this recurring theme that like, I feel like I'm sharing my love, my want to connect. And I think that the communication sometimes is not easy for my brother. And so he's very much like an acts of service person. So he's going to like do something. His love language is like, let me do something to facilitate you or to help you. But I don't necessarily have to, you know, vocalize my love or care, but not to say that they don't, because he does. He has become more and more loving and caring and expressive as time has gone on. But when I told him that I missed him, since he lives, you know, hundreds of miles away, I think for me, that was just like, man, like that was a display of expression that was very genuine. And it felt like it touched on something else. And it felt like missing and like this sense of like losing or loss. And then I think I went to, wow, I have this big feeling of like emptiness or loss or pain or inside. And I just, that's when I ugly cried and I belly cried and I was like boohooing. Like, honestly, couldn't stop for a little while. Like, you know, it went on for a couple minutes and then I was like, woof. I felt exhausted, like I needed a nap after that. And so I knew that was a real experience. I was like, this is really happening. So then I wrote down a couple of kind of affirmations in my journal and I practiced some self-talk, just like being compassionate, saying like, Karen, it's okay. Like, this is okay. And there are questions that you can ask your family and dad, and you may or may not get the answers that you want, but it's okay to still be grieving. And I just felt like, wow.
So it just came out of you? Like, yeah, like the just thoughts, like, those questions, like you just.
So, and I my cousin is like a energy person. She practices Reiki. And I text her and I was like, girl, what is going on with the stars? Because there's just been like this huge shift in my energy and I can't place anything in particular as to why it happened. She was like, oh, there was a full moon last night. And I was like, oh, it's the moon. You know, I'm like trying to find a reason why this came out on a random Wednesday.
So you started realizing that it was about loss. It sounds like you talked to your dad. You decided to reach out to people. And then it was your dad who was like, oh, you're grieving your mom.
Well, this thought came to mind. I remember him saying, like, Karen, I don't remember seeing you grieve. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I grieved my mom recently. No, he said that to me like when I was in college, when I was first diagnosed with like anxiety and depression. And I was like, he doesn't know what he's talking about, or maybe he does, but I don't know what that means. Cause how do you not grieve someone that you cried over? I mean, I cried over my mom for sure, but I thought I grieved her, but I think there's just a lot more that needs to come out to be let go. And I realized that I also don't attach myself very closely to people as well. I have like a friend group, but for new people, I'm like very appropriate about boundaries and what I'm willing to do get involved with new people, because I honestly don't want to attach myself to a person that I'm going to have to grieve their loss. Because I guess, you know, as a young person, experiencing death makes you very aware of death and the black and whiteness of like people being here and people not. So in order to avoid that feeling of abandonment or loss, I just attach to people that I think will be around long term. And it's also an energy thing too. So I'm a very positive and open person. So I'm very particular about who I share that energy with. And other people have said like, Karen, I didn't really know you were like this. And I was like, yeah, I can be closed off if I'm not really like into your energy. So
So do you think that society tells us that grieving should start and end, but it doesn't? Like, that's not
how I don't think it does. And I also think that we're also not really given space to grieve. Like, I was floored when I found out that my Iranian international affairs professor in college wore black for nearly a year to grieve the family member that died. And when she told me that, I said, oh my God, that's so amazing. That means people are giving you kind of grace and like space and time to just grieve and operate and know that, like, be careful with this person, show compassion with this person. You get that. I don't think you get that here. I mean, I think people can barely take time off work to grieve in America. Like, it's impossible. And then you have to like schedule it. It's like, it's something on the checklist to do.
Part of the business.
Yeah.
The business. It's so stupid. As a Vietnamese American person, my parents and my older aunts, they grieve differently than we grieve. We definitely schedule it in. Like, you can schedule everything. You can schedule your period. You can schedule your grief. You can schedule
your sex.
Plane trip, your sex. Yeah, everything needs to operate on a schedule. And so it should have these expectations about a beginning and an end. And you're right. America doesn't like extreme displays of emotion, right? But in other cultures, on the day of the funeral, you better be wailing, like, ugly cry to the max. You better be, because the amount that you cried shows how much you love someone. Even if you didn't love them, you need to show face that you are ugly crying. I like never saw my mom show emotion except at a funeral. Then all of a sudden, she could throw her body on the casket. I was like, who is this person? What's happening right now? We're supposed to pack it up until someone dies. And then you're like totally allowed to.
You let everything out.
Then I feel like my mom just
cultural.
I feel like what she did is she put this person was like packaged together, wasn't allowed to show emotion at all until a funeral. And then you just took all your pent up feelings and you just put it all into that grief.
Regardless of the relationship you had with that person, it was more about you having your emotions displayed and expressed.
Yeah, the flailing, you know, and we definitely have, we do have rituals where you're like, for the whole year, you do this thing to commemorate your grief and remember this person. And then we have grief anniversaries, like the year, the day that that person dies, you're supposed to celebrate that, the day that you remember them. And I don't know that American culture has this thing in it. You know, it's like we all moved to this land and then we decided that we were just gonna suppress our emotions and be workers.
Yeah. It's almost like two worlds, or almost like I've worn a mask, like I'm okay. But like, then you have this private side that's not. And I think that's very relatable to people who are feeling hopeless, helpless, sad, like they want to kill themselves. Like, it's not something that you put on display, and it's like something that you're made to feel somewhat ashamed about. I think community and the people around you that support you are the best form of treatment if they're healthy people, if they're supportive. And we can't do it alone. Like, we just are not, as human beings, are not designed to handle grief and loss and extreme sadness and all of that on our own. We have to get through it, but we also need our friends and family there with us to do this.
And it does feel like when you show emotions, people want you to stop. Like, people in America,
it makes them uncomfortable.
It's so uncomfortable for them. So they're like, why are you crying? Can you hear some Kleenex?
This reminds me, and like, especially in government offices, this reminds me of when I used to work for the government. And if like a constituent came in with a really heartbreaking or sad story, it was like, oh my God, everyone just like tensed up. And then after that person left, there was usually like a like audible sigh of relief. But it's like, meet people that really need help, and we're not getting them what they need. So they're in desperation. And I also wanted to just mention that, you know, I have some really close friends that lost a parent in adulthood, you know, in their 20s or 30s. And that's still a really difficult experience, but it's much different. At that age, you have a different relationship with your parent. They also have other women in their family that have helped them kind of with the grief process too, I think, that they've been able to grieve with. So, you know, my advice, I think, for motherless children is that, like, if you are listening to this, like, find a person of your same sex or a person that you're comfortable with to help you with the process. You don't have to have a big circle of trust, but if you can find someone that you can relate to.
And I think what you said at one point was that if you don't grieve, you don't get to see all the things that you lost and to honor that, right? Like, all you feel is shame, which we hate shame. We hate That's not a good feeling to have. And there shouldn't be shame around grief. Like, you people should be allowed to grieve. But what are some, when you think about losing your mom, your parent, like, what are the things that you think about that you lost?
Oh my God. So I lost a connection to my past, one of the only ones. And being a Black woman, I think, in America, is already you're disconnected from your ancestors because you don't know where you come from other than a boat that came to either North Carolina, South Carolina, or somewhere in the Caribbean. It's like, or Virginia even, but it's like all of this disconnection. I feel it's like, I don't know who my mom is because I was so young. I don't really know much about her. I never met my grandparents because my parents were the youngest of 12 and 13 children. So my grandparents had died by the time I was born. I don't have a connection to many other women in the family. Because no one lived in Maryland except for my one aunt who died as well. I mean, I was close with her for as long as I could be, and then she died. So this like sense of self and identity, I think, is really, really lost. I'm like trying to figure out, well, who am I? I don't act like any other women I know. I don't look like other women I know. You know, how do I, am I doing womanhood right? You know, I know I'm doing humanity right because just it's like most of my how I operate is based in like my religion and my faith. So I feel like I'm doing that part right. I feel like I lost a sense of confidence even because my mom was the cheerleader, the encourager, the nurturer, the person to say, yes, you can do this. My dad is much more laid back and reserved and kind of just feeds in his own little world.
You lose all of the qualities that that person has that brings things in your life that then are gone. And that's so interesting. Like, it reminds me of a client I had who lost his wife. And after that, he just kind of fell in a real dark spot and developed depression. And everybody would talk about his depression, but realized that a lot of his depression was born out of grief. Like, and then it wasn't until he talked about his wife that it was like, oh, wow, I lost so much. I lost my organizer. I lost my person that I gardened with. I lost this person who brought all of these other things with it that I lost this meaning.
Yeah.
And I think of my husband who lost his mom. He lost his mom as an adult, but they were super close. And
at that point, you can have like a friendship, which is probably way worse. You're losing your best friend.
I think that that's a part of it. And it's funny because it's 2020. I talk about like things coming up, you know, like we started couples therapy and she died in 2011. So that was 9 years ago. And so much was going on. He didn't grieve. And so for the last 9 years, he didn't grieve. And now he's a parent. And it's all coming up, you know, like you never know when the grief is going to come up. So it's all coming up. And he always has dreams about her.
Wow.
Weird things happen. I like to think that she's like a ghost in our house.
Yeah, she's.
I don't know.
There's in Ghanaian culture, there's just a belief that your parents never leave you. And you know your ancestors are with you. So I definitely have started to believe that. I always thought my mom left. Because she never talked back to me. So I felt abandoned. But I am starting to like, you know, feel more confident that she's around.
Yeah.
I'm sure your husband's mom is around too.
It's hard because he doesn't believe that. He doesn't believe in those ideas. Like, he's so scientific and it's good. I obviously believe in science, but I do also let myself believe that mysterious things can happen.
Yeah.
Because I want to. And so it's interesting because I think that plays into our grief, right? Like the way that we can grieve.
Our faith is powerful, you know, our mind power is so powerful. So what we believe we can actually attract and manifest. And so I think for him, he may come to the place where he feels like his mom is around, and maybe not, but maybe you can help him with that manifestation.
I think
because she is in your children. She is living, like living through them for sure. There's, you know, I've heard things where like kids have mannerisms of their grandparents or other things.
Yeah. You know, if you had just one last thing to impart on people about the process, what would you say?
I am trying to practice having grace and compassion for myself during this pandemic. And it's something I have to make an effort to do every day. Because every day there's something that I want to do that I don't get done. Every day there's something that I make a mistake on or mess up on. Every day there's something that I do that probably piss someone else off or is somewhat selfish or whatever. And I just have to remember that, like, I have to just be very loving and kind and positive and think good thoughts for myself, because there's no one else that can do that for me.
Yeah. And how about for grief specifically?
I think that relates to grief because it can be very, you can get stuck in the thought that like, why me? You know, why is this happening to me? Why can't I just get over it and operate like everyone else? Why do I feel different? Instead of focusing on those why questions, just thinking about how awesome it is to be you, how much love you have for yourself, and the things that you appreciate, and how cool it is to be you and to have the likes and the passions that you have. I think all of that is really important in the whole grief process and allowing yourself to be open enough to release the feelings and the person. And it helps you to accept that grief doesn't look in other people like it does in you, and it doesn't have a time limit, and it doesn't have a particular cycle, I guess. It's like in waves, it's up and down, it's back and forth, it's comes and goes, and it's just a part of life. And that's something a lot of people don't talk about.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with you. I agree that grief, that sometimes we have too many should-haves or expectations, like I should grieve like X, or I should be quiet, I shouldn't cry, I should be over it, you know? And you're like, man, with loss, no, there are no expectations about how you're supposed to grieve. It's your own thing, and you're allowed to show all the whole spectrum of emotions. I would also say it's funny, sometimes life throws you these little moments, and are we aware of them? You know, it's like the smell or a dream, mm-hmm, or a thought. And it's like, you could see it as a torture technique that the universe is throwing this thing at your face. Or you can say, hey, maybe this is like a moment. I can say, it's trying to tell me something. Listen and think about this person and think about myself and show compassion, like you said. You know, we don't do that enough. We're so go, go, go. I'm done with go, go, go.
I have like a heavy blanket of guilt on me when I'm not accomplishing something. And so I think you really hit the nail on the head when you said that you don't have to meet these expectations that we set for ourselves.
All right, y'all. There's a lot more, I'm sure. We touched on a little bit, but if you're still grieving, you just keep on grieving. Every day, it's fine. You just do you, boo. All right, Karen, thank you all for joining us today. We hope you all can keep fighting in the open, and we're going to see you next time.
Bye.